Want an easy way to see if you could save money on car insurance? GEICO gives you three. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the GEICO office nearest you. Three ways you could save 15% or more.
The Trifecta presents an hour looking at the 45th anniversary of Title IX with Kate Fagan, Cassidy Hubberth, and Sarah Spain.
Special hour dedicated to the 45th anniversary of Title IX. What are the misconceptions? How has it helped? What has it not achieved yet? And talking to some great and powerful women about this, including our next guest, coming with to us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Donna Orender. She is the Generation W founder, former pro basketball player, former president of the WNBA, spent 17 years with the PGA Tour, has offered to be my life coach, and I'm still getting my you-know-what together to take her up on the offer. Donna, thanks for making time for us. Happy to have you. We're talking about Title IX, and the law created a whole generation of sports-hungry girls who grew up and wanted to keep playing. But so far, it feels like the ability for professional women's leagues to catch up to the demand of the players hasn't been a fit. What do you think is the biggest roadblock to things like national women's hockey leagues and soccer leagues and team sport leagues having success?
Okay, so let's just jump right in here with the easy questions. Hi, Sarah. It's really good to be with you.
Yeah, fix everything, Donna.
So listen, when we talk about the marketplace, I'll never forget being in an orientation at WNBA meeting, and we had a very famous football player's kids who were coming on the league, and he stood up and he said, you know what, it's not right, and it's not fair. And I looked at him and I'm like, you know what, the marketplace is just not as developed as it needs to be able to support in the way that we would all like it. When you talk about the match, I mean, listen, players want to make more money. And you know what? As women, we want players to make more money. But we need to have a marketplace that's just more robust. And I think that really is tied into the very difficult social and cultural issues that continue to evolve and how we are viewed as women and how as women actually support other women as well. It's not all about all women supporting all women. I think that would help. But it's really about the depiction. I mean, let's talk about how women are even depicted in advertising today. I mean, the objectification of women and where they fit in terms of their roles has a big impact on a lot of how sports is consumed.
Now Donna, it's good to jump off with you when it comes to the Title IX equation, because you were so heavily involved leading the WNBA, which didn't have the benefit of some of the legislation that Title IX imposed and gave certain finances for. So you saw firsthand on the ground what it was like trying to run a women's league that didn't necessarily have any legislation. What did you see during your time there? Progression did you see that the WNBA, the ground that it gained, and what hurdles were cleared for the WNBA?
That's a really great question. I will tell you this, that one of the first calls, if not, I think the first call I got when I took the seat was from Senator Bayh, who was so excited because, you know, he actually helped author the Title IX legislation. And it really made me take note. I will tell you that this, putting stakes in the ground, what I saw was, you know, by the time I left the WNBA, you look now, there are girls that grew up in a time when the WNBA always existed. When I was coming up, I remember Phyllis George asking me at one of my college games, would you ever play pro basketball? And I'm like, that is a dream I never dared. So the differentiation with Title IX is we are seeding truly generations of young girls who have the opportunity to play. And what does that mean? It means that there's generations of girls and boys behind them, understanding that that is, right, the new normal. And that is really powerful. Looking at basketball, I remember, you know, Miles, who was running the NCAA then, you know, college basketball for girls became the college jewel. Lots of money was invested. We saw the quality of athletes expand, the number of athletes expand. And all of that helps develop the depth, if you will, of the talent pool and also the wider recognition that this is something good and helpful for girls. So, it, you know, the growth and development actually, it exists on many different levels, if you will. Make sense?
Yep.
Definitely, Donna. This is Cassidy, by the way. You talked about the importance of women supporting women, but what about the necessity of men supporting women? We recently saw LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, you know, make it a point to celebrate Diana Taurasi setting the scoring record. And then we see these commercials from NBA stars showing support for the league. How integral do you think the support of NBA stars is for the ultimate success of the league? Just to focusing on the WNBA as a representation of needing the development of the success of overall female professional sports.
Oh, I think it's a huge plus. I remember I would go to games and Dwight Howard would be there or Chris Paul would be there because, interestingly enough, relating back to the former question, a lot of these young women now have grown up with these guys who are playing at some of these colleges at the same time. So they're contemporaries and peers. What you're doing is that the NBA, right, their fan base, the guys that follow the guys, they have a lot of capital. They have a lot of brand value. And so when they say, hey, you know, if LeBron thinks Diana's cool, then you know what? I probably can think that Diana's cool too. I think it is so very important and a real powerful piece that they can play. I mean, let's even switch over to our friends at the NWHL. When the female and male athletes, hockey players and beyond, stood up for those women, I thought that was an incredibly important moment for standing up for women in sports.
Yeah, and Donna, you know, we say this all the time. Game recognizes game. It is far more often some schlub bump on a log couch rider who's dissing women professional athletes than it is male professional athletes because they respect it. Why wouldn't you respect a woman who loves sports and is great at sports and goes out and can ball? Usually it's the people who are, you know, made to feel inferior by powerful women that tend to not be supportive of female athletes. I ask as we're celebrating all the things that Title IX has done, that we're still behind in a lot of ways. And I wonder what the next step for Title IX is, in your opinion, whether that's better representation amongst coaches, whether that's a better equality of funding, whether that's people of girls of color having access. What do you think is the number one thing we should be focusing on?
Yeah, you know, I think all of those things are worth focusing on. If you're asking me, like, what's the magic bullet that will, like, create the next level of accomplishment or the next level of excellence, I honestly don't know. I think it's more transparency as to what is the reality of what's going on as opposed to what the mythology is of what's going on. Because I gave a talk 2 years ago at the NCAA, and I talked about the importance of women involved in every single level, from the competitive level to the coaching level to the administrative level. And I was shocked that I had all of these women athletes come to me at the end and say, let me tell you what's really going on in my school. And 2 years ago, like that really shook me up. That really shook me up. I think there's a reality that is happening around the country that does not match up with the mythology of, like, look how far we've come. Yes, we have, but we really have to expose a lot of the inequities that continue to happen for them to change. Otherwise, those who are in charge think, it's all okay. You know what? I got my other problems to deal with. So let me focus on that. I think we have to keep everybody's foot on the gas pedal here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Donna. We really appreciate you making your time and some really fantastic insight on this 45th anniversary. Thanks.
Hey, let me just say this, Trifecta. All of you girls, you just rock, and I love listening to you. And thank you. No. And just thank you for doing what you do. I think it's important and it's entertaining. And, you know, I vote with my time, and so I vote my time with you because I think you just add so much to the sports conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Really appreciate it. Generation W founder, you can go check that out. Generation W, fantastic events and support for women, supporting women all over the place, not just sports. Check it out.
The Trifecta presents an hour looking at the 45th anniversary of Title IX with Kate Fagan, Cassidy Hubbard, and Sarah Spain.
Joining us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line is Deborah Slaner Larkin, Women's Sports Foundation Chief of Special Projects. Thanks for joining us, Deborah. I wonder, we're 45 years into Title IX. It still feels like there's a lot of misconceptions out there. What Title IX myth do you think is the most important to dispel?
Interestingly, that Title IX has done its job. people look to the fact that we have made progress. But the truth is we haven't really made progress in the last 10 years. We still haven't reached the number of boys who participate in high school when they were in 1971. And while we have many more women in college, we are not in the proportion of women who are attending college. And we are woefully shortchanged by the amount of scholarship dollars that are awarded. But the biggest factor of all, whether we're talking about high school, college, or leadership, is the lack of women of color in all of those areas, whether it's participation or leadership. 60% of girls are not playing or don't have access to high school sports, and they're primarily African American and Hispanic girls. And we know from the Women's Sports Foundation reports and the latest report from Richard Lapchick, only 3% of head coaches in college are women of color. And in many of the conferences, they get F grades because they're not, everybody looks white and male. Hmm. So the myth is that Title IX has done its job, and we are really have to be vigilant in making sure that the next, that it doesn't take 45 years to get compliance of Title IX and equality overall.
Deborah, a lot of college sports fans often only care about Title IX when it might impact the sports that they love and watch. And at the top, of course, are football and men's basketball. When it comes to the conversation of where we're moving in the NCAA of possibly paying college athletes, where does Title IX fit into that discussion? Because we hear lots of conversation about that it would block possibly paying student athletes if you'd have to pay everybody. Can you explain to us a little bit about where Title IX fits in that conversation?
Sure. The law really talks about equality and equity. It's not whether they should be paid, but if they are paid, it's to make sure that girls and women have the same opportunity for that paycheck that the guys do. It doesn't matter. Nothing in Title IX says that because your sport brings in X amount of dollars that you are entitled to more money. That's not what the law says. It is by participation and not by the level of attention your sport gets. So our job at the Women's Sports Foundation is call attention, talk with the Office of Civil Rights and the leadership of the NCAA, and then provide guidance, letters, understanding of what the law provides and how they can go about making sure that the students get equity.
Well, Deb, while you point out it's still important to grow the impact of Title IX by getting more young girls involved in sports, how about the current female athletes, the ones that are participating in sports? How much do you think they know about Title IX? And if athletes aren't talking about that, is that necessarily a bad thing in your mind, a bad sign?
It is such a missed opportunity. We have shown the value of sports in the just for playing sports, the fun, but really importantly to the society, the education, health, and leadership benefits that girls get from sports. And Title IX is the law that will get them there. What we learned is that only 10% of college students are explicitly spoken to about Title IX. 83% of coaches are not spoken to about Title IX. So the awareness levels are woefully low. I'm really excited to tell you that the foundation just started a new game. It's called Play Nine, and it is directed to high school and college athletes to raise their awareness levels. It's going to be presented where they live, which is on platforms of Facebook Messenger and Kick. And we're talking about issues that they face every day of the inequities or the possible inequities about Title IX. And we've been piloting the program, and the students are saying, wow, I didn't know this. And thanks. This is a fun way for learning about it. This is engaging to me, and I can go in and talk to my coach or the AD and see if this really is a Title IX infraction, and if so, how can we eliminate it?
And Deborah, the Women's Sports Foundation, obviously a huge part of helping spread the right information and the next steps and beyond sports, the importance of Title IX across our collegiate campuses and below. So thank you so much for taking time to chat with us and for all the work you're doing on behalf of Title IX and the Women's Sports Foundation.
And let me congratulate you guys as well, because, I mean, we've worked with Kate and on issues about coaching with Tracy Griesbaum, and Sarah, I know that you've been dealing with harassment, and Cassidy, you're in there every day fighting. We need you to keep spreading the word, so thank you.
Great stuff from Deborah Slaner Larkin, Women's Sports Foundation Chief of Special Projects. Kate, I know you asked her about the effect that Title IX might have on the possibility of stepping into to a world where we pay the highest producing players in collegiate mm-hmm. sports. I don't know if she thought you meant funding or actual like salary type things, but some of the research you've done has pointed to whether those would be in conflict.
Right, and I think she's totally right. And when you look at the language of Title IX, there's nothing inherent in Title IX that suggests that all athletes should be compensated on a higher level. And so she's dead on about that point. I think the point that I find most fascinating when it comes to the future of Title IX and what might have to be litigated as the NCAA moves toward paying student athletes, and I think it's hard to argue that it's not moving toward that when we've seen over the last couple years the stipends they've introduced, and they've now given friends and family money to travel to tournaments and bowl games, and that stuff we've never seen from the NCAA before. So we are on a path towards some level of compensation for student athletes, and the big question then always comes, well, how will Title IX impact that? If an athletic department wants to pay its football and men's basketball teams, will it also be required to pay all of its lower revenue sports or non-revenue sports as well? And I think the piece that I think listeners who might be interested in this particular topic need to know is that we've never paid coaches equally between men's sports and women's sports, right? I mean, like, men's basketball coaches and men's football coaches often make 50 times what the same coach for softball or women's basketball makes in that athletic department. So Title IX has never ensured equality in terms of funding or in terms of paying coaches. And there have been certain legal cases that have held up the disparity in between men's and women's coaches. And so it still has to be litigated, but it's possible that Title IX also might not stand in the way if athletic departments now want to pay certain stipends to football and men's basketball because of their revenue and don't want to pay it to women. There is precedent for Title IX not standing in the way of that, which I think is fascinating.
It is interesting. And you mentioned the coaching thing. Not only are we seeing that obviously the coaches of men's programs are way paid more than on the women's side, but that actually since the Title IX, the percentage of female coaches in our collegiate campuses has gone drastically down.
Right.
So while it opened the doors for more women athletes to play and more young girls to play, what it also did was made the programs where these girls and women play more successful, mm-hmm. more profitable. And as the salaries went up, the more men wanted the jobs, and then people abandoned hiring women, even for women's jobs. I'll have to find that stat when we come back after the break. It went from something like 99% of girls' coaches were women, and now it's down
to... It's like 42 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's not even 50%.
Yeah.
It's a pretty remarkable change.
Celebrating the 45th anniversary of Title IX, this is The Trifecta with Kate Fagan, Cassidy Hubberth, and Sarah Spain on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Trifecta presents an hour looking at the 45th anniversary of Title IX with Kate Fagan, Cassidy Hubberth, and Sarah Spain.
Our great guests so far have talked to us in part about some of the myths of Title IX. And if you don't know all of them, one of them actually came up yesterday. I was on a Ryan Russillo show. Will Cain was filling in. And he first asked me whether I thought that Title IX was more appreciated or resented by the average listening audience. My response was that I wouldn't want to presume. The Women's Sports Foundation says 8 out of 10 people asked about Title IX believe that it's a good law and it's doing the right thing. As for the average Russillo listener, I can't speak to that person. but he followed that up with, you know, what do you say to people who criticize criticize Title IX for being the reason that some non-revenue men's sports are dropped, sports that are often wrestling, swimming. And Kate, a couple years ago, you did a great story about the myths of Title IX that addressed this as one of them. So I'll let you take this answer, which is an often asked question.
Yeah. And in a stroke of fairness to Will, who I used to do a radio show with and who I adore, and he would always say, like, unless you're going to have me on the segment, at least assume the best of me. And so I will do that here on behalf of Will Kane, posing what is traditionally among sports fans who have questions about Title IX, one of the biggest questions, which is, doesn't it kill smaller revenue or no revenue men's sports? And I think you have to start from a broader question there, which is, do you think college sports are a capitalistic enterprise? And that's part of the major problem with the NCAA is it dabbles in being capitalistic and also being a funded by the government. And so you have to ask yourself the broader question of, do you already believe the myth that all football and men's basketball programs are making money? Because if you believe that myth, that's your number one problem. I believe some of the most recent data is
12%,
that, like,
right?
Yeah, like, there's like maybe 20 athletic departments out there, 20 college football programs that, like, legitimately make money. I mean, and we all know who we're talking about there when we talk about...
Yeah, they're the ones that have hologram lockers, because that's
right.
The best way to
right.
spend your money.
So you have to ask yourself the question of whether you even...
Slides.
Right. Like, if you believe that the pursuit of college athletics is supposed to be about learning and education and life lessons, in which is the stated mission. So if you're one of those people who's like, screw all of that, I'm about just making the most money, let's pay the athletes as much as we can, let's get rid of everything that isn't a pursuit of money, well, then you're on one side of this equation. If you're
conversation
college football
about the
and
conflict.
Basketball should be minor leagues.
One at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies, one at a time.
If that's what you believe, then
amateur
college football
sports.
And college basketball should be minor leagues and should not be affiliated with schools.
And so then you get to the level of, if you are someone, the majority of people are like, no, college sports is generally speaking like part of the education process, and certainly we get other benefits from it. Well, then what you're engaging in when you say women's sports are the problem, or like pitting marginalized people against marginalized people so that the kings can sit back there and just watch the common folk attack one another, and which happens in all levels of society, where you're like, oh, that's great. Let's let all the poor people fight each other and blame each other because they don't have a bigger piece of the pie, when the people with the biggest piece of the pie are up here just like taking big chunks out of the pie, to carry my metaphor as far as possible. That's what happens. I love pie. That's what happens with women's sports. Instead of saying like, well, here, let's look at the larger issue here of the fact that we're paying, you know, Nick Saban $8 million and we have 100 scholarships for football when really we only need like 50, right? I mean, NFL roster is 53. Let's just let women's sports attack each other, and let's let golf and wrestling attack women's sports, and then we'll sit back here with our buffet and all of our resources. And that's what happens when it comes to blaming women's sports.
Well, maybe I'm missing the point here, but why would non-revenue-making men's sports even be a priority over women's sports in the first place?
Because men are playing them.
Okay.
Honestly,
does that
like,
not sum everything
right.
up?
Right.
No,
like,
that's the whole point. Yeah.
Right. You're totally right. Like, why would we fight for a wrestling program that is also losing money? Why would that get priority over another women's program that might also be losing money as well? Like, it's all just losing money, so why not have some level of equality
balance?
And equity in terms of, like, who you're giving opportunities to?
Right. And as of just a couple of years ago, the Women's Sports Foundation had the stats out that there were $965 million given to women in athletic scholarships and $1.15 billion for male. So the numbers aren't even yet.
Right.
We still have women athletes receiving almost 65,000 fewer opportunities at NCAA institutions. Female high school and college athletes continue to lag behind when it comes to uniforms, equipment, facilities. I mean, we can look at the professional level and see that that's still the case. We can look at your average Saturday, someone on Twitter telling me that they show up for their 8-year-old girl's soccer game and something went wrong and there's only one field and there's a boys' team and a girls' team and it just goes to the boys' team. And that's what we're telling 8-year-olds already, that those 8-year-olds who are literally playing for nothing, no differently than the girls who are playing for nothing, are more important simply because they're boys.
And there, as you alluded to with like the specific numbers there, like there is this myth out there that like Title IX has, you know, put one arm behind the back of all sports and forced this like 50-50 separation of everything, all of the resources in college sports, and half of them go to women and female athletes, and it's totally unfair, and it's drawn completely down the middle, which is radically, radically wrong. Like, it's at 30%, I think. Women's sports in college, despite what Title IX says, still gets funded at 30%.
Yeah, like, just under 30% in Division I. Mm-hmm. In 1982, and now it's 46.7% last year, I believe. And
not to mention that Title IX.
Cassidy.
No worries. I'm making a small
all
point.
Fired
here,
but, up here.
No, you should be. Not to mention the fact that Title IX doesn't actually mention sports, as you pointed out in your myths about Title IX. So, you know, people are upset about Title IX, don't really understand Title IX, like what
right.
actually
it's
Title
about-
IX is.
All sorts of things beyond. It's about safety on campus. It's about educational opportunities. I think what's frustrating, and Kate touched on it, is the idea that we're already at 50-50. And our guests even said the same. Like, it's great to celebrate what has been helped and what has worked, but we have to keep our foot on the gas because we're still in a position where we're certainly far from equal.
Yeah, because Title IX is a really potent, like, axe, so to speak, but if nobody's going to wield it, and by that I mean
follow through. Right.
Yeah, like there has been no school has been fined by the government because of a Title IX violation. So Title IX has teeth. It should have teeth. We assume it has teeth, but like nobody, for various reasons, and some of it being the way college sports works, and if you are an advocate for Title IX within your athletic department, there are side ramifications for that. I mean, there is a lot of cultural issues within an athletic department. If you're a woman or a man who's fighting for Title IX issues, like, you will be shamed in a different way, and it will be very, very hard to go to the courts with your complaint because of the black mark that it could be on your record. So, like, Title IX is doing as much as it can, and I think college sports is continually, and the people who run it, have continued to, like, break off more and more chunks and resources and take back the ground from Title IX because they can, and it's always been like that. So Title IX is, like, gripping on and holding a space for women's college sports, and it is not 50-50.
Right, and it's worth noting, too, how often the required reporting because of Title IX law isn't done. We saw it at Baylor. We saw it recently. I'm going to blank. Was it Colorado? Another school where there were allegations of abuse or sexual assault. They are required when they hear this, if they are a coach, an athletic director, anyone in the department, to report that as a Title IX violation, and they don't. And the people who are often working in the Title IX offices of these schools are sort of encouraged to dissuade people from going forward with their claims. That's certainly what happened at Baylor. And you're right. If the axe doesn't get wielded, and if no one uses it correctly, it's ineffective. Mm-hmm. And so we can celebrate all the good things, but certainly there's a lot more to go.
The Trifecta presents an hour looking at the 45th anniversary of Title IX with Kate Fagan, Cassidy Hubbard, and Sarah Spain.
About the 45th anniversary of Title IX, how far we've come since 1972, how far we still have to go. And all of us have never lived without it. We've never known the difference. But it's great getting the perspective of those who have, and also hearing the gradual change we've seen in the way people react to girls and women in sport. We talked to Julie Foudy. She's a fascinating example of, if you give people the opportunity to care about women's sports, they will. And her great story of them pushing for the World Cup to be played in giant stadiums. They were in a giant traffic jam on their way to the Meadowlands, complaining about the traffic when they realized the traffic was for them.
I love
and that,
that
they'd
story.
Sold out a 90,000-person stadium. Love that story. And you got to give them
a
chance.
I'm always fine with traffic when I realize it's for me.
For me,
know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't think that has happened yet, but one day. I like to tell myself that when I'm on, like, the Cubs parade bus. Oh, thank you for coming out to celebrate all the hard work I've done this season reporting on the Cubs.
That was a little humble brag, though.
Right, exactly. Oh, that I was on the bus? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was totes amazing.
Totes.
Sacramento Kings assistant coach Nancy Lieberman, also a basketball Hall of Famer, was on The Sporting Life with Jeremy Schapp this morning, and she had a story about fellow basketball Hall of Famer Alonzo Mourning coming to realize the importance of Title IX in a way that we often hear.
I can remember being in Sydney in 2000 at the Olympics in Australia, and we were waiting for the women's team to come back to the hotel. I was doing the TV, and Alonzo Mourning was standing with me, and he had just gotten back from the birth of his daughter. It was a really surreal moment. he was seeking me out in the lobby, and he grabs me, and he goes, Nancy, I need to talk to you. And I go, Alonzo, what's wrong? He goes, I just had my first daughter, and I named her Sydney because of the Olympics. He goes, I'm a Title IX daddy. He goes, I get it. He goes, I didn't understand it before. He goes, but I want my daughter to have the same things in life as my son and the same opportunities. And it took my breath away that Alonzo, at such a young age, could recognize the fact that how important equality is in our society. And really, what you need to know about Title IX, it's about expanding opportunities for female athletes. And it's really governed by the Office of Civil Rights. And I can't tell you how many times I've been to Washington and been on the Hill and talked to our constituents about how important it is that no person, you know, based on sex, should be excluded from participation or denied benefits or be discriminated against, you know, athletically, educationally, over receiving federal funds and assistance.
Kate, using words that are different than the words you used before we came back on air, what was your reaction to that?
I'm going to be more measured now because I believe anyone who comes to the realization that Title IX is important or that opportunities for women are important through whatever means that happens is a good thing.
Yes.
Do I wish that it did not take such a personal connection as having a daughter to realize that for half of the population, the ability to pursue their passion about something in an educational framework where there are federal resources given to the other half of the population should also be distributed to one half of the population? Do I wish that that lesson could be learned through other means than just having a daughter? Absolutely. That would be my goal, is that listeners, even if they don't have a daughter, can recognize that people pursuing their passions is a good thing, and that when it comes to federal funding, we should have that distributed equally so that all sides of the equation can pursue their passions. I want to come to that more organically than just having a daughter. But that is awesome that Alonzo Mourning recognized that after his daughter was born. Are those different words for you, Sarah? Do we feel okay about that?
Yeah, you used better words that were more appropriate for the air. We did not need the dump button. And you actually said it eloquently and perfectly. I think we hear this all the time. And for a while, I think we were like, oh, that's great. Like, you're on our side. You get it now. And now I'm so sick of it because you came from a woman. Everybody did. You do not need to have a daughter. And what it ends up spinning as is if you don't respect women because of your mother or your friends or your wife or your lovers or your sisters, the only way you respect them is that you feel like they are a part of you or that you're in charge of them or that you need to protect them or that you want them to succeed in life because you're control over them is due to the relationship you have with them. It's pretty gross, actually, when you think about it, that the only women that make you realize that you want them to be safe and cared for and respected and have every opportunity in the world are your children and not the ones that you love and marry and that you were birthed from.
Well, look, though, Sarah, respect and caring about something are two different things, because it's like if it directly we care about things that directly impact us. This is just human nature. So like no one's saying that Alonzo Mourning was disrespected the thought of Title IX and the impact of it. He cares more about it because it impacts him, mm-hmm. because he's seen his daughter getting chances that he did not experience with his mother. So I mean, you can't just.
I'm not speaking specifically of Alonzo Mourning. I don't know if he was disrespectful before that. I'm speaking of the constant narrative that we use wherein it requires you to have birthed somebody, not literally, but given over your seed so that someone can be birthed for you to understand that they are a human being.
And I think just to get the ship pointed more like toward Title IX is like, I think the larger takeaway is from this hour of discussing the 45th anniversary, like for listeners, is if you haven't read about Title IX or you only hear certain myths, it makes sense to dig a little deeper. If it doesn't seem like anything you should ever care about unless, you know, you have a daughter, well, maybe right. give that a second thought, because I think it's been, from a personal point of view, having received a scholarship to play college basketball and been a beneficiary of Title IX, it's one of the most important pieces of legislation for millions of young girls out there who have learned so many unbelievable life lessons because of the foresight in 1972 to put this on the books. And like the amount of good it's done, we can discuss the balance of some of the good and whether it's outweighing some of the bad. In my mind, it's like so far drastically been on the positive spectrum that it's just, it's an honor to actually be on the air and like discuss something that has opened so many doors for me. No, no response.
Wait,
guys.
No, 100%. I agree. I was going to let Cassidy jump in, but I appreciate you bringing it back around.
Didn't want us to go down the Alonzo Mourning, you know, right. Rabbit hole there.
Right. So, Cassidy, as we're wrapping up here, what's next for Title IX? What do we, you know, I want to continue celebrating it, but I suppose that there's a lot left to be done that we need to be honest about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the celebration of it and the conversation of it and actually I think the conversation outside of sports it needs to happen as well. What impact? I just think pinpointing that Title IX has only impacted women in sports is limiting it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just my thought on the importance of Title IX, just as women in general, women in business and how it's impacted
education.
I think maybe that's how you continue to grow it, because as we talked about, there's so many misconceptions and conflict that people have just narrowing it down to sports.
And I think also, you know, we didn't even touch on, Cassidy, as you just mentioned, the impacts of Title IX as we've seen on certain college campuses and how that's going to go moving forward. But I think we are in a state right now as we look forward in college sports. There's a renegotiation happening of what we want our college sports to look like, how we want to treat our student-athletes, whether we want to deem them student-athletes. What will the business of college sports look like? And I think understanding Title IX and understanding where it's come from and what role it might play in the future of our college sports is going to be an integral question, both for the courts and for the general population, I think, in the next 3 to 5 years as the NCAA moves forward in its next incarnation.
I absolutely agree. I think it's also worth noting the effect that it's had on our boys who are growing up alongside girls who are just as into sports as they are, and how that will affect how they're treated as women by these men when they grow up.
Celebrating the 45th anniversary of Title IX, this is The Trifecta with Kate Fagan, Cassidy Hubbard, and Sarah Spain on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.